Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Lake to Lake Girls. We are your hosts, Tiffany and Cassie. Cassie and Tiffany. Cassie's back fresh from the city. A nice weekend with the girls down in the city.
And I'm exhausted.
Exhausted. I feel like a vacation like that, you come back more exhausted than you left.
Yeah. Certainly wasn't.
I don't know why that keeps moving.
It has a life of its own right now.
It wants to scare you.
I feel like it should just be still.
I learned very, very much the hard way that you don't pull on those, because the last one I broke.
I think I was here when you did that.
I think I was. I think you were. I think you're right. And welcome to another episode of the Lake to Lake Girls. It is November 10th. Cassie, take it away.
So here today is Dennis Money with Seneca White Beer. And thanks for coming in. This is your second time on the show, in studio. First time with me, so we're excited to have you.
Thank you.
Why don't you start off by telling the crowd a little bit about White Deer and your mission, and then we'll pick your brain a little.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Seneca White Deer was formed in 1999. It was a group of six men who decided that they were really concerned about what was going to be the fate of the White Deer at the Seneca Army Depot when it was announced that the depot was closing. So we each chipped in $100 and incorporated a Seneca White Deer. And our initial mission at that point was to protect the white deer. But we have learned over a period of many years now doing this that there's much more to the Seneca Army Depot than just the white deer. You have great military history, you have civilian history, and there's all sorts of an abundance of wildlife there, turkeys, coyotes. It's just it's a great mix.
There's a plethora of animals out there.
A plethora, that's correct. Not a commonly used word.
Now, the last time you were in, you guys were looking to apply for some grants to help out and try to get that initiative going. How is the grant process going, and have you guys seen any headway with that?
Well, we really never did make it very well in the grant writing process. So we're putting all our eggs in the basket, thank you, this year on the New York State Open Space Program. Mm. And this is a program that only occurs about every 5 years in New York State.
Okay.
And it offers an opportunity for land, water, historic sites to be selected for funding under a fund called the Environmental Protection Fund. Mm-hmm. And then these sites can be administered by either New York State Parks or New York State DEC. And we're hoping that the depot, which is a priority area for our region called Region 8 of the DEC, will hopefully be selected for funding for this from this process, and thereby hopefully protecting at least 7,000 acres of the depot.
And how many acres is the depot?
The depot in its entirety is 10,500 acres, and some of that acreage already has been committed to other commercial uses, plus Hillside Children's Center. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at what we call the igloo area or the conservation area, and that's approximately 7,000 acres.
And that would cover the entirety of it?
That would take care of the rest of it, yes.
Okay, and what would that program allow? You said it would protect the white deer, but in what way? Like, would it conserve the area so like nothing can be done there, no hunting, or how does that work? What does it entail?
Well, the open space hearing only allows two state agencies to take over the property, and that's New York State Parks or New York State Department of Environmental Conservation.
Okay.
So it really depends on which of those agencies that if they're actually going to take over the property. It depends on what their mission is. So obviously New York State Parks is into parks and recreation. And if that was the case, what we're proposing is that New York State DEC take over the management of the wildlife and to help them out, because that's really not a main mission of New York State Parks.
Oh, okay. Now, you guys previously, in previous years, you've done tours. Have you brought that back at all in terms of this season? Because I know it wasn't really in play last season as much.
No, our tours... We can't do tours any longer because the owner of the property, the Seneca County Industrial Development Agency, won't allow them.
Oh.
They don't believe in tourism. If you notice in their name, industrial development, you don't see conservation or tourism in that definition.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as we would have liked to have done tours, and people are really asking us all the time to have more tours, we're not able to do that. And that's despite the fact that every single bus, every single time was filled. And in 2012, which was the last year we did the tours, mm-hmm. we did not spend 1 cent in advertising. But people came and every bus was filled.
Wow. That doesn't surprise me, because you see people all the time pulled over on the side of the road trying to take pictures of the white deer because they know where the white deer are and they try to get pictures of them up there.
Right.
Now, what can the EPF do to help that? Would they allow you to bring back the tours? Would a grant like this program help you bring back tours? How would it increase tourism for the white deer? How would it increase the visual, like the visual aspect of it? How can people get involved?
Well, I think what we're advocating for is that you have Sampson State Park right across the street from the Seneca Army Depot.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they were both kind of born together, the depot in 1941 and Sampson in 1942. And it seems to us like it would be a perfect fit to be amended or annexed to Sampson State Park and probably keep its name, keep the Seneca Army Depot's name, but become part of the state park system.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're thinking is that to minimize the capital outlay that you need, you would use the existing facilities at Sampson, have people load up on the buses there, and then with a tour guide, go into approximately where the guardhouse is at the depot there on 96A,
mm-hmm.
and conduct a tour, and or perhaps have wildlife safaris, historical safaris, wildlife photography safaris, and this would, I think, would be a perfect fit for New York State Parks. You may be aware that Sampson now is looking at a master plan upgrade, Sampson State Park. And once again, we're advocating for, if Sampson really wants to be the biggest and the best they can be, we would ask that they seriously consider taking control of the 7,000 acres. One of the complaints we heard at the master plan hearings the other night was the fact that people run out of things to do at Sampson. Sampson is a pretty big park. It's 2,030 acres, if my memory serves me correct. But if right across the street is 7,000 acres, and when people get bored of going down to the lake or eating on the picnic tables, they can mosey on over to the Seneca Army Depot, and then you have all this other acreage that might be available for hiking, biking, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, horseback riding, a whole host of things, a plethora of things for outdoor recreation. And the other great thing about the depot is that it's flat and it's perfectly accessible for people with disabilities. Unlike trying to go up in the Adirondacks and trying to find a trail that's mm-hmm. probably somewhat marked and driving 4 or 5 hours to get up there, the depot is strategically located in the Finger Lakes region and within close driving of many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. And as I mentioned, people that aren't as fortunate as we are, that have to be in wheelchairs or whatever, they would have this opportunity to wheel into a bunker and actually see graffiti that was written in 1942 or 43, you know. Tiffany was here in 1954, you know. And it's really cool stuff inside there. They got little graffiti planes and some things you can't say on TV, but it's a pretty neat thing. And what we found is that when we dressed a person up as a military police reenactor, people really ate it up. They really thought that was really cool, because being a military policeman at the depot was a relatively boring job because they never got attacked. And so they would drive up and down these roads day in and day out and hoping that something would happen. And when nothing happened, they would do drag races down the roads and this down the igloo roads. And these are stories that they've told us over the years that I've been involved. And so it's fascinating to hear about all those stories, those mm-hmm. war stories, so to speak. And
What did people do before cell phones and selfies and
they talked. It's crazy.
Selfies and
that's right, they talked.
It's crazy how that works.
So I think one of the allures of the white deer itself is the mystery behind them. So can you tell us why the deer are white and a little bit about them, like the population? There's how many of them left, and
I'll do my best. A lot of people have said to me that, you know, the deer are white because of the radiation from the nuclear bombs that were stored at the depot. And I say, no, that's not the case. And some people say the white deer were magically transported from Canada at night and dropped into the depot.
Oh.
That's another story. But in effect, what happens is that every brown deer, a typical brown white-tailed deer, has a gene for white color. And occasionally, a brown doe will produce a white fawn. Because, you know, white deer by themselves are not extremely uncommon. But to have as many as we have at the depot was due to management. So in 1949, two white fawns were seen. And the base commander said, if any of you military police sharpshooters shoot one of those white deer, you're going to be digging two holes. One for the deer and one for you.
Yourself, yeah.
And so they were given protection, and over time, as the white genes became more and more dominant in that population, you started to see more and more white deer.
Because it is isolated. If you think about it, they built the depot around this huge area, and you can this concentration of white deer was stuck inside there. So they're safe from hunters, predators, all that kind of stuff. So their population was able to increase over time. So it gave them the opportunity to thrive in that area.
Right.
And to get rid of it would be kind of a...
Unfortunately, they stick out like sore thumbs. So if they lose that protection,
they're gone.
They're definitely not going to survive for very long.
I mean, there's all sorts of rumors that the state would come in and take down the fence and the herd would disperse. And I think that's the craziest idea they ever possibly could do, because what you have here in Seneca County is something that no other place in the world has. And if you market that properly, you not only protect the deer, but you generate jobs and you generate
economic development.
Positive reaction to Seneca County and the Finger Lakes. It's a no-brainer to me and to our board. We really think that this could be, you know, a real asset. And I have experience with animals. You know, I was involved with the Peregrine Falcon Project that's now 20 years old that we started at RG&E and Eastman Kodak, and then I got involved with the River Otter Project, and we were told by the South Koreans that we were probably the most famous River Otter Project in the world because of how we marketed our team, how we got the people excited about these sexy animals, and the white deer are another form of a sexy animal, and you use the white deer to excite people about all the other critters that aren't quite as sexy, like a snapping turtle or a pygmy shrew, you know. But you get people excited. My God, you know, if there's more white deer out there, what else is out there besides white deer? And then you also learn about the value of habitat and how critical habitat is, especially as our population continues to encroach upon their native habitat. So there are so many things that can be done, not only to enhance Seneca County's image, to save the deer, but also another factor is you could make the depot a wildlife education center with no parallel in the world because of the abundance of animals there. I can guarantee you will see a deer, you will see turkeys, you'll see raptors. And how many times have you gone to the Adirondacks, and except maybe for Old Forge, you rarely see a deer,
mm-hmm.
you know? But here, right in our backyard, is an opportunity to, you know, get away from your iPads and your iPods and get out there and listen to a coyote howl and to take your camera and just enjoy yourself and see your state bird, the bluebird, and it's just an incredible place, as well as learn about the history of the depot.
Now, I think that's a common misconception for some people as well, because Seneca White Deer Inc. is just—it's not just about the white deer; it's about the military history at the depot as
right.
well. Do you have a basic understanding, like how that progressed in 1941, how the depot was started, why that area was chosen, and what kind of impact it had? Because I know it really increased, I mean, population here tenfold, and then when it went down, so did this that area, and like right. this, something bringing this back would really, really help out and bring back that original population that we did have here. Maybe even if it's just tourism. But can you tell us a little bit about the military history out there?
Sure. I mean, the War Department decided that this is, well, let me back up. This is all politics.
Okay.
It was a congressman from Auburn.
Imagine that politics.
It was a congressman from Auburn. His name was Taber. And he and Franklin Delano Roosevelt didn't get along very well, but Franklin FDR needed him to vote on certain of his incentives. So he, and reputedly now, he offered the ability to have a depot situated in the congressman's turf.
Yeah, his district.
And as it happened, there were several other locations that were being considered, but because FDR needed the congressman's vote, rumor has it that it was depot was selected. And the other consideration of the depot is that it was 300 miles away from the coast, so the Germans couldn't bomb it, and it's only has about 2 foot of topsoil and soil over bedrock, and bedrock is good to act as a cushion to absorb an explosion if, in fact, something went awry in a depot, in an igloo, I should say. So they came in June of 1941. 4 months later, the depot was built. 519 ammunition bunkers, approximately 100 miles of roads, 24-mile fence, and it went operational in early 1942, just as we were going to war in Europe. And over time, other things happened. You've all heard of the women's encampment in 1983 and 84.
Mm-hmm.
There was up to 20,000 women who came for those 2 years and to protest the storage of so reputedly nuclear weapons and missiles that were going to be used in against the Russians during the Cold War.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was the fact that, once again, allegedly there was nuclear weapons there. And when I first had the opportunity to go into the north end of the depot, which is called the Q area, there on the door was the famous splitting atom sign, the fission sign of the great big of the red atom exploding, and mm-hmm. that was a sure giveaway, if nothing more, that they had one time they had stored nuclear weapons there. I have some good sources on that, and the depot had contained at least 1,000 nuclear bombs, and it was the Army's largest nuclear arsenal in the whole world, and that was pretty impressive. And then, all the missiles that were being stored there. And then another thing that I think was kind of fascinating was at the south end of the depot, they had about 800 drums of pitch blend, which is an ore of uranium, and those 800 drums were used to make the first two atomic bombs, and they're all stored at the depot. So
they were stored as in past tense.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
right.
I mean, if you remember back to high school, like you would still see military vehicles going back and forth, and everybody's like, what's going on? Why is there military vehicles or helicopters coming in and out? What can people take from that today? Because, I mean, it's fairly obvious that you can't go in there and see where they stored nuclear bombs. I mean, because, like you said, no one can say for sure, but you do have it on pretty good sources. But what can people go in there to see in terms of historical, like, what is the word I'm looking for? What can people go in and see that has historical value to them? Like, they can really be like, oh, my God, this was here. This is so cool. Like,
that's an excellent question because, you know, the north end of the depot where the Q is now being leased by Finger Lakes Technologies Group.
Yeah.
And they would have to give us permission to go there.
Oh, okay.
Go inside. But what's unique about the Q is that you have a fake building that's 10-foot thick concrete, and below that concrete are four bank vaults which were used to store the triggers for the atomic bombs.
Wow.
And it looks like a fake building, but the Russians knew it was fake, so they weren't fooling anybody. But they got that, and then you have the military police headquarters. And they started with a small contingent of MPs, but during, you know, the women's encampment and so on, they had as many as 200 men and women who were sequestered there, and they used what is now Hillside Children's Center as mm-hmm. their barracks area. And then every day they would go in and they would be there, you know, rotating through on a 24-hour basis. So you have those two buildings, plus the different igloos. But a lot of this, you know, a lot of it has gone away. But I think what you could find, too, is some remnants of some of the old farmhouses that were there. It was about 135 homes or families that were evicted or asked to leave.
What was that? What was behind all that? Because I'm not really familiar with the history behind why it is no longer a military base. What was the reason behind taking it away?
When the Army changed its mission back in the early 1990s, from what I recall, is that the depot no longer fit that mission. And once again, I'm just trying to think about this, but the depot was too small. It was too small for, they wanted to concentrate their ammunition and their bombs and whatever into larger depots that were scattered around in more primitive areas like Nevada and Northern California. And so it came time for the Army to say, well, it's time to put the depot to sleep.
Oh, wow. Do they do that? And, like, is that a rarity, or has that happened quite often where you just up and leave a military base like that?
Well, you look at all the bases in New York State that have retired. Griffiths Air Force Base, Plattsburgh Air Force Base. Fort Drum, on the other hand, has expanded.
Expanding, yeah.
But its mission is mountain troops, you know, mountaineering troops, and winter
what a
combat.
Better place to find.
It's a great location.
Great location for that.
So what they've done now is that they reduced the number of military bases and kept a few that are much larger than in the past. So New York has lost quite a few bases. I'm from Rome, New York, and we used to watch the B-52s take off.
I was born on the Air Force Base out there.
I know. I heard. I remember
that.
Yeah,
that's right. I did tell you that.
We used to go down the end of the runway and watch the B-52s fly over your head.
My dad was an MP for the Air Force out in Rome.
Was he?
Yeah.
And they had their own separate atomic arsenal. I thought that they got their nuclear bombs from the depot, but they didn't. They had their own. So,
wow. I didn't know that. So this is multi-tiered, multi-leveled kind of education for people. Not only do you get a historic value, but you get an outdoor
excursion.
Yeah. And what more is the Finger Lakes about than being outdoors and enjoying the natural beauty of it all?
Right.
Between these two areas. So what's next? What can people do to get involved? How can the White Deer Incorporated be helped out?
That's an excellent question. And once again, it goes down to politics, because the final decision, there's 137 sites that are being considered for funding under the Environmental Protection Fund.
Okay.
And it's downstate and upstate. And
now, how many is there handed out? Or is it two grants, or is it just like a certain amount of money? How is it?
The fund is about $125 million right now.
Oh.
And they don't use all of that up at
one time
for every 5 years. But it's hard to say. It'll depend on which sites are selected and how much those sites are going to cost.
Okay.
And I know one site down in Staten Island cost almost $40 million. It was an old monastery. But other ones are a lot, you know, and Hemlock and Cannadice cost millions of dollars too, the watershed protection over there. But sites could be as small as a building, you know, and be $100,000, for example. So it really depends on how much political clout this region can exert upon Albany, and how many people are willing to write or email into Albany saying, we want the depot protected. And it's going to take not only politics, but it's going to take numbers. And that's what we keep telling everybody. And if you go to our website, which is senecawhitedeer.org, all the information is on there on how to do this, how to email or snail mail your comments to Albany. And you only have until December 17th. After that, all the comments, no more comments will be accepted. And then some group of people will make the final decision. So we need Mike Nozzolio and Brian Kolb and Phil Pomisano to really get on the wagon and support this.
Definitely, I agree. I feel like there's a lot more attention on this area. I mean, you have everything from the tourism in terms of the wine tours here around here. You have the upcoming breweries. You have the Sweet Trail. You have the Sweet Treat Trail. You have the Cheese Trail. And you have the possible casino coming into the area in the town of Tyre. Now, could that help or hurt the White Deer Incorporated? Can something like a casino, and I'm talking drawing good attention, bad attention to this area, maybe unwanted attention, I don't know, like for development reasons, if you catch my drift. Yeah.
I think the casino would be an asset because, I mean, the depot and the casino, I think, could be a good marriage because how many hours a day can a person gamble?
True.
You know, and you need something different, especially if you have children or a wife that doesn't gamble or a husband doesn't gamble. They need some other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can take the wine trip, tours, of course, but I think it would be a great fit as
this is something different.
A different alternative.
Have posters of the White Deer right in the lobby, and that's eye catching. So
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
People are like, ooh, what is
there's
this?
There's a study that just came out said that tourists who visit the state parks. We have 6 state parks just in Seneca County alone.
Mm-hmm.
The visitors tend to spend on average $200 in retail while they're visiting, and then $100 in additional expenses, so food or beverages and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also included in the wineries. But that's $300 per person, per adult, that is put right into our local economy. That, you know, if we had the draw of the White Deer, that would be that many more people coming in and putting that money.
Putting those dollars into this area.
The wine trail, the downtown shops in Main Street, Waterloo, Seneca Falls, Ovid, and then, you know, Waterloo Premium Outlets, and the list goes on. But
yeah, we totally agree. I mean, when you have this unique asset, and if you can market this asset to benefit not only the asset, but people, society, and wildlife, it's a win-win situation.
Definitely. Now, as far as... I can't remember where I was going with this anymore. I had a question ready to go.
Gotcha.
Fish sticks. No, you're good. I was thinking about it while you were talking. And now it's just escaped my brain.
So there are other places in the country that have similar setups to what you envision, where they're actually capitalizing on wildlife itself or a specific species in a specific area that people... So can you think of any right off the top of your head where people literally make a trip to go see a specific animal?
Whale watching, Massachusetts, and in Maine. It's a big business. You have another facility in Ohio. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's an old abandoned strip mine that has been refurbished, and they have African animals there. You know, ours are North American animals, but you have people going to Alaska every year when the eagles are migrating. What's nice about the depots, though, is that it's there year-round. The animals are there year-round. You don't have to wait for a migration period to occur. And I think the depot would also be a real hit in the wintertime in the fall because the leaves are gone and the bucks are out there. And they're great for photography. And then in the springtime, you have the birds, because I forgot to mention that it's also...
It's a leaf... It's a...
Important birding area.
Birding area. Huge birding area.
So, and birders have a lot of discretionary money.
It's a very unique culture.
It's eclectic.
Birders.
It is. But they are out and about.
I've had my first couple experiences with birders this fall, this summer and fall. It was interesting. But they know their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're talking
about. And they
about.
Report them, too.
Right.
It's, I don't know how you do it. I think there's a movie on it. I've seen the movie where you go literally around the world trying to find as many birds as you possibly can.
Oh, yeah, sure, for your list.
There's a list that you keep. Yeah, you have to take a picture, you send it into a website, and, like, there's prizes for, like, now, I don't know if it's prizes, but there's, like, rewards for getting the most birds or the rarest birds or, like, finding new birds. I mean, it's pretty intense. I don't even want to call it a hobby because I feel like it's like a step up from a hobby.
It's an addiction.
So it is. You need discretionary income in order to be a top-tier birder because you got to go all over the place.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, the woman that runs our website, she goes all over the world. Yeah, add to her list. and she's a very devoted, dedicated birder. So,
and you come across some of the most beautiful exotic birds, but you have to be all about it. It's really cool, and I feel like it's an untapped area out of the depot. I don't even feel like we've even hit
the
top. Well,
the nice thing about the white deer is you don't have to be an expert in order to appreciate them either. Like, I am not a birder, nor I don't know much about birds whatsoever. And so a bird, it's cool to me if maybe it's a significantly different color, but that's about it. Like, cool. The white deer can be appreciated by anybody, young,
because they're like, wow,
old.
We've never seen that.
Right, and whether they're from 2 miles away, like right in Romulus, who grew up there, I still get excited when I see the white deer. Mm-hmm. But we've had international travel writers here with the tourism program at the county from England, and we were on a bus, and we had to, like, stop because they wanted to see the white deer. So it's very, very, it's in high demand, and I think it would be a shame to let them go.
And don't forget, you're the only place in the world that has this attraction.
You know what's beautiful about this area, too, is how everybody's is so willing to lend a helping hand. And, you know, more people need to write down to Albany, and more people need to let them know, like, how we feel about this area. But I'm talking more along the lines of the businesses here. You have Heron Hill, who's willing to donate $2 for every bottle of game bird wine that they have to the cause.
Yep.
And I feel like that just speaks to what this area means to us and how we want to preserve this area.
They're a great partner.
It's amazing. It makes, like, I don't know how to express,
well,
like, how cool that
local
is.
Local businesses in the area too, who have also been reaching out to their colleagues and saying, "This is what we've got. These are the facts. This is the information that you can present and, like, spoon feed you." It's like, here, just add your name to the bottom of a letter with this information, and it's just it's
easy.
Yeah.
But it's so awesome to see everybody come together, though. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
yeah.
Awesome.
And we need, don't sit back and wait and think that someone else is going to do
you
it.
Said
you really have to do it.
17th
is the deadline.
December 17th is the deadline.
Has to be there by the 17th, so probably send it out before then, correct?
I would hope so, yeah. 4:30
yeah.
It closes on December 7th.
Yeah.
I've been told that already.
You've been informed.
But, yeah, we would appreciate all the help we can get.
Do you have any other partners like Heron Hill, or are you looking for more partners like Heron Hill who's willing to do something like looking for helping you guys out with donations and whatnot?
Well, yeah, we certainly would like donations. We've just spent several $1,000s in October with newspaper ads and TV ads on Channel 8 in Rochester, trying to get the word out to get people educated about the process and what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Carol Doolittle from Frontenac Winery at the southern end of the county. She's been doing a great deal of work, as well as, and just like John Engel from Heron Hill, getting the word out to the different wineries.
You know what someone should do? Capitalize on the white deer and make, like, a winery right there saying, White Deer Winery, save the white deer. You know what I mean? All your bottles of wine, there you go. There's your imaging.
Yeah.
Draw attention to it, because then you're like, you can't get rid of the white deer. That's my product. That's what look at.
There's a couple of wineries who have, like, white buck.
Yeah, Hazlitt's has one.
Has a
Three
white
Brothers.
Buck. Three Brothers has one. So there, I mean, there.
There are out there. Okay.
Yeah. But okay. I think one other thing you can do.
I need
is
to go on a tour again, I guess.
Okay.
Every major highway that comes into Seneca County, you have as welcome to Seneca County. Welcome to the home of the world's largest herd of white-tailed deer.
Mm-hmm.
No one else can say that. Because lots of other places have wineries and recreation and scenic vistas, but you have the white deer.
What's the population at right now?
No one has actually done a census, an aerial census, in several years. The last count was between 185 and 200 white deer.
Now, is that good? Is that up? Is that down? Would you figure?
You know,
could it be better?
I really can't tell you. I think at one time there was more white deer than mm-hmm. we have now. Why?
Well, you said they're limited to 7,000.
Well,
or they have free reign of the whole depot. So
yeah, they pretty much have free reign, and I know there's a couple at Sampson.
Yeah, there's a few out and about.
There's some by the prisons.
Do you know what the potential ratio is from white deer to brown deer within the depot?
I would say it's probably 5 or 6 to 1, brown to white.
I would have to agree with that.
Something along those lines, yeah.
By the fence and seeing, you can probably see
3-4
five,
deer.
5 brown to 1 white.
But you know, like where I live over in Ontario County, you might go 10,000 brown deer to one white deer. So you definitely have a cluster of white genes here that are pretty dominant in the gene pool.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you were started with 6 men, pitched in $100. Has it grown since then? Has there been more people of interest who are interested in with the incorporation? Or is it, like, more people become involved actively, I should say?
Well, it's like any other, and it's a business. It's like any other business. People move on, and we get fresh people coming in. So we have 10 board members, and they're all volunteers, and so we dictate how we're going to do something, approach something, whatever, make a video, do a TV ad. We have approximately 2,500 people who are on our email, our e-newsletter, mm-hmm. electronic newsletter list, or our snail mail list. And so we've definitely grown in that capacity.
Yeah. How does one get on the e-news list? The newsletter list.
How do you get on?
Yeah.
Just go to our website and say I'd like to sign up. There's no charge.
There's a link down at the bottom, right?
Oh, there's like a become a member and join us today. You can become a member. I like that.
And you have merchandise too with the white deer on it that people can purchase and the proceeds go towards the cause, right?
We have very nice t-shirts. We have very nice photo book, coffee mugs, and a DVD that we put together. So won't get rich on that, but at least it gets the word out. And also, we're available to give presentations to different groups. So we go all over Central and Western New York State doing that.
So the deadline is December 17th.
Right.
When would you know when the awards were allocated?
That's a good question, and neither the DEC or Parks could tell me that. Because I think the regional people don't have a clue as far as when it's going to happen. I would suspect it'll happen by early February at the latest, because it has to be incorporated into the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you got to get the state budget out there in March so it can be approved by early April. That's my best guess.
And what would be the next step? Say you, like, everything goes right with the world. We get this program approved for this area. What would be the next step after that? How would we start developing the White Deer region? And how would we start developing economic development in this area for the White Deer encampment?
I think the first step that I would recommend, you know, would be out of our hands, because if the state agencies owned it, I would hope they would use us as a consultant. But I would recommend we do a master plan and we get the local colleges involved, from Hobart, ESF, Cornell, FLCC, and we get the students out there and we all work together to develop an overall master plan. And then I think you start working with I Love New York and get the depot marketed around the world. Can you imagine if we marketed the white deer to the Japanese and to the Germans? I mean, the Japanese have a white deer sake, because the white deer is a sacred religious item in Japan, which I just recently learned about. And I bet thousands of the Japanese people would come to see this living white deer. And the same with the Germans.
I didn't know that. What do you know what the basis behind that is? Like why it's sacred for them?
No, I haven't had a chance to dig into it, but there's a small city in Japan where it's revered. And if you were to go do a Google white deer in Japan, it would pop up.
It would pop up. Okay. Huh.
So.
I like that. That's really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You would want to create a master plan. Now, is there any way where, because you know everybody's about like the bottom dollar, regardless of what it is, in what way would it need extra employees, would you say? Tour guides? I mean, we're talking jobs here. Mm-hmm. We're talking development of the area. We're talking about increasing traffic, tourism, and everything. What kind of economic impact could this have? Like, increasing...
Well, obviously, if, say, for example, New York State Parks took it over, they would get the increased revenue from the tourists.
From the tourists, okay.
However, you're going to see an increase in hotel usage, restaurant usage, winery tours.
Local markets.
So there's going to have these, what I call spillover effects, from the additional tourism that would be generated. And I think by using the state park infrastructure, you don't have to build any new buildings right away at the depot. Just use what exists. Mm-hmm. And then do like the 3 to 5 year test to see if it's really going to work, which I think I'm pretty sure will. And then if at the end of 3 to 5 years and you've gotten this really dynamic ecotourism facility, then you go and you start to build LED energy efficient welcome center. You could maybe put in a conference center.
Mm-hmm.
And you could also rent out the bunkers. You have a bed and bunker, and people could camp out in the bunkers.
That's cool. That would be different.
Although, they'd have to do something about the acoustics, because if anybody snores in there, you're going to hear it. Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
Now, you said that you got involved with five other gentlemen, and what got you passionate about? Because, nothing sells something like this other than more than passion for a cause.
Mm-hmm.
What got you involved in, helping the Seneca White Deer? Why does this affect you so much?
It's because of the success that we had with the Peregrine Falcons and turning my stodgy old former company, Rochester Gas and Electric, into an organization that was proactive on doing something good for the environment versus reactive. And it showed that the company had a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it saved them tens of thousands of dollars in environmental fines because of the relationship that we had strengthened with the Department of Environmental Conservation because of our activity of getting involved with Peregrine Falcons. We were the only private organization that has ever been allowed to raise Peregrine Falcons in New York State.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I didn't know diddly squat about them. I just saw them going through Manhattan one day chasing a pigeon, and I said, we have to do that in Rochester. And it took off. At first, RG&E was dead against it. So I went out on my own, and I wrote letters to three dozen businesses in Rochester, and I had $16,000 in less than a month. Because each of the birds cost $1,000. We bought them from Minnesota. And so that was the start. And then you also, as you know, when people get in elevators, they usually clam up. They're quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Now when I got in the elevator with my fellow employees, they would do bird songs. They would slap me on the back and they'd say, nice, nice job. And they were actually feeling more human working for the utility company than they had ever felt before.
Yeah.
Plus I had two cameras all over in the company, and people that were coming in to pay their bills could watch the little falcons grow up. Because in a matter of 5 weeks, they're ready to fly.
Yeah.
And so it was really fantastic PR. And then when the DEC said, we need some help on promoting the River Otter Project, and we need to raise money for that, RG&E gave me permission to work on that project as long as I continued to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
And we raised over $500,000, and we had 8,000 school kids involved. And the kids were doing pizza parties and T-shirt parties, and they would donate all the money to the River Otters,
Aww.
The River Otter Project. And then we had Cornell was involved, the Seneca Zoo was involved. We had Nixon Peabody, the law firm, my company, Eastman Kodak. So we had some big hitters and we had some small companies. But once again, it was, like I mentioned earlier, one day the South Koreans came over and they wanted our advice on how to protect river otters in South Korea. And we said, well, how do you even know about this? And they looked at us with this astonished look in their faces, and they said, you're the most famous river otter project in the world. And I never knew that. But we had helped Holland, we had helped Quebec, we had helped Spain with their otter projects, and we just had one heck of a good team of people.
Yeah.
And it was just a delight, and especially seeing the kids. When you saw, we had the Rochester School for the Deaf, and we invited them one day because they had raised $35 with pennies. So we had these little kids, and they were shorter than an otter would be if the otter was standing up. And they were right beside the box that held the otter before, as we were going to release the otter into a creek or a river. And to see the look on their faces, the glow, the excitement. I mean, that's how you get your passion.
Yeah.
When you...
You're making me want to cry.
Yeah. Really. And then my sister had passed away, and unexpectedly, and a friend of mine bought an otter, spent $1,000 in memory of my sister.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that.
So.
Okay.
So it was... That's how you get going. That's how you get passionate.
Yeah. I could see it. I can see that. Well, thank you so much for coming, and we really appreciate you coming, and hopefully we'll keep us posted on the whole program, and hopefully by December 17th we'll have as many people sending in letters. We'll have to keep on hitting this up, so people, because you can't do it one time and then never again. We'll have to keep talking about it to make sure people know when the deadline is, and keep reiterating, you know, frequency of message.
We'll put links on our Facebook page too, so that people can easily find the website and access and
definitely
join the mailing list so that you get updates. Yes. As well as the information on where to send your letter.
Exactly. SenecaWhiteDeer.org. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate
it. Thanks for your help in spreading the word.
We're trying. We're going to keep going. And we'll have to get you in here early next week next year to congratulate you when you get this.
Boy, I hope that
Gotta be
through.
About time
yeah.
for us to do that. So that's going to be our show. That went by quickly.
It did
went by really quickly. We'll see you guys next week. Amanda will be back in studio with the Lake to Lake girls. We'll catch you guys then. You guys have a good night.